Chapter 6, The $1 Million Portfolio Before and After Comparison. In Chapter 2, we reviewed the changes underway. In Chapter 3, we discussed the principles you can apply to help you to be successful with your investment of time and resources in this environment. In Chapter 4, we reviewed the areas of opportunities. In Chapter 5, we reviewed how these areas addressed various scenarios of the future. Now, we bring all of these things down to specific examples of investment portfolios. On the resource page under Chapter 6, you will find a side-by-side portfolio comparison of two sample portfolios. The first is invested in the bubble economy. The second is invested in the real economy using the strategies we have been discussing today. At the bottom of the portfolio comparison, you can click for portfolio details for Portfolio A and for Portfolio B. So follow along on the resource page with us or print out the details. One of the things I encourage the people who gather in a Solari circle to start with as an educational process is to simulate a $1 million portfolio. It's a stress-free way to get to know each other and learn and apply Solari investment strategy together. Often I will hear, "I don't have $1 million, so there's no point in my doing this." My answer is that indeed this is an invaluable exercise for you to do, even if you don't have $1 million. First of all, when you learn to look at the world from the point of view of someone responsible to manage family retirement savings, you gather a critical piece of intelligence you need to understand government, politics, your local economy, and anything else having to do with resources that work around you. Second, if we want to build strong economies, then we need to attract money out of the bubble economy and invest it back in the local economy, in the real economy. Your local area is shipping its capital to Wall Street. How do we attract that capital locally? That is very much your business as a citizen. Learning about investment will help you understand and empathize with the people who are responsible to ensure that savings are invested soundly. Over time, this knowledge can help you see opportunities to create wealth for you and your family and to grow your savings by aligning in mutually beneficial ways with people who have capital to invest and donate. What we put up on the resource page are two portfolios, Portfolio A and Portfolio B. Portfolio A is before the application of Solari investment strategy, and Portfolio B is after. First, let's introduce some context. We have a couple that is living in a high-cost area. The husband grew up in a farming community and loves being close to nature, as does his wife. However, like many people, they got busy going to college, working, and getting busy in the area where they were working. They have two children, and the time it takes to juggle homes, two jobs, schools, and vacation home keeps them very busy. As the kids grow and their overhead rises, they're generating a lot of income but saving less and less. Part of positioning their assets is having them ask the question, "Where do I really want to live? And what kind of life do I really want to have? What is my purpose in life?" For this couple, it turns out it's returning to their husband's birthplace to be close to land and family. However, that may not be your purpose at all. Your purpose may lead you to the city or halfway across the world. So I want you to understand the philosophy that we are trying to demonstrate is that of financial intimacy and greater self-sufficiency. Under no circumstances are we suggesting that everyone should pick up and move to the country. Each person is unique, so this is not a formula. It's an example. Portfolio A is a portfolio that is deeply dependent upon and invested in the bubble economy. Portfolio B takes advantage of the seven principles and seven opportunities we've described and is invested instead in the real economy. Portfolio B's returns rest on long-term fundamental economics and are less dependent on a political economy. If you look at Portfolio A, it's very liquid, much more in liquid investments in the bubble economy, whereas Portfolio B is more invested in non-liquid assets. In Portfolio A, the couple has two real estate properties, a primary residence, and a vacation home. They have much more money in real estate, and that real estate is leveraged. They are carrying a lot of debt. They are in a high-cost area. While they have a lot of income, they're not saving very much money. They're working hard, and they're spending money. They have high consumption. Their only local investment is $125,000 invested in state and local municipal bonds. This is an area to be careful of. Our state and local governments are very hard hit by the housing bust and credit crunch. A combination of the end of the housing bubble, a falling dollar, and rising inflation could harm the value of many municipal investments. The couple has the rest of their savings in global liquid investments. They have $150,000 invested in securities that carry the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, including $25,000 in agency mortgage-backed securities. They have $50,000 in mortgage-backed securities issued by government-sponsored enterprises. That means they have $75,000 in direct or indirect government-guaranteed mortgage securities. They are financing the housing bubble and the so-called subprime mortgage crisis, and probably don't even realize it. They have $50,000 in a world bond fund. They have $100,000 in a corporate bond fund. We probably don't even know who and what our money's going to finance. As our couple has become more concerned with the stock market, they have shifted funds from the stock market to FDIC-insured CDs. They have $50,000 in one CD in a New York Fed member bank and another $25,000 in another New York Fed member bank, and they've got a checking account in a New York Fed member bank for $10,000. So they're financing the wonderful people who brought us Enron, the dot-com and telecom bubbles, and the trillions of dollars missing from the federal government. This is not feedback that inspires large banks to practice market discipline. For equity, they have $125,000 in the basket of stocks that are all the same and similar players, large government contractors, New York Fed banks, companies that are centralizing control of natural resources and agriculture. They have $40,000 in a large energy fund, so that's natural resources. They have two $50,000 investments in socially responsible index funds. As you know, if you listen to our audio seminar, Beyond Socially Responsible Investing, Part 1, much of that money is going into the same large centralizing enterprises that you see in the rest of this portfolio. Now, if you step back and you look at this portfolio, $725,000 in global liquid investments and $850,000 in liquid investments, what you discover is there is little diversification. A lot of people will tell me, oh, this is a very diversified, conservative portfolio. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you look through the different companies and different government agencies and government-sponsored agencies, what you realize is all of these investments are far too dependent on the ability of the Federal Reserve to print more money and the U.S. Treasury to issue Treasury securities and for the dollar to hold its value as they do so. What that means is, we don't have 30 or 40 or 50 different credits here in this portfolio. We have one credit. This portfolio is completely dependent on the U.S. government. And that credit is not supported by fundamental economics. It's dependent on a politically managed economy, which means ultimately it's dependent on the U.S. military and our capability in covert and overt warfare to make sure that this sort of bubble economy is sustained. Essentially, this family's assets are invested in the financial equivalent of a U.S. military future. While the U.S. military has successfully performed to protect such financial values for decades, they are now evolving to a situation where the U.S. military capacity that this portfolio is counting on is ever more dependent on private companies and contractors. If you look at Portfolio B, we see a transformation to assets that are based on fundamental long-term value. In Portfolio B, our couple now has much more money in their home. They've moved to be close to family in the farming community where the husband grew up. Their home has a much lower appraised value, and they have purchased it with all cash. They have no mortgage debt. They are leasing most of the land to local farmers and paying someone locally to help with maintenance so that they can focus on those aspects of developing the property that they enjoy. They've sold their second home, so they're not liable or at risk on a debt on a second home or variable rate debt. The risks of carrying variable rate debt are increasing, so this is something generally to be avoided. They have lower income, but they're saving more because they're so dramatically lowering their overhead. This resulting increase in savings is critical to building financial security. The reduction in overhead has had to be sufficient to more than offset some of the increased expenses that can come with our change in location and lifestyle. First, our couple is now allocating more for insurance. They've moved from having two attractive employer benefit packages to accessing healthcare through the husband's group consulting practice and paying for more insurance independently. Getting the various types of insurance that a family like this desires can be one of the obstacles to making this kind of switch, so this is an area where it pays to get the expertise you need. Also remember that the endurance and reliability of your insurance provider is more important than price. So look for insurance providers who can weather the scenarios you consider possible. Second, our couple is now allocating more for education as they have moved our children to local private schools, given their growing concerns about the increased disclosure and regulatory requirements present in public schools. Given the potential savings and improved performance, they are researching the possibilities of homeschooling and networking with the other homeschooling families in the community. The greatest advantage of their new life is that they are working fewer hours. That's more time to do for themselves and to supplement their children's education at home and on the farm and the surrounding land. Another caveat, there are no specifics provided such as whether the couple are going to keep their assets in 401ks, IRAs, college savings funds, trusts, or other estate vehicles, as this adds a layer of complexity related to issues that need to be addressed individually. They're not as relevant to the issues of bubble economy versus real economy. So again, this is an example of two investment philosophies, bubble economy versus real economy, but it's not a financial plan. The couple has liquid investments. They have much less in municipal bonds, but now are investing in agencies who are run by people they know and trust and are doing the kinds of things that they believe raise their popsicle index and that for their neighbors locally. They've started to invest in precious metals, including coins that they have at home and in a deposit box, and they're maintaining more cash at home for liquidity if they need it. They have set aside a significant amount of money, $50,000, to do direct local investment, including with a Solari Circle. But doing the research to move into local non-liquid investment takes time, and in the meantime, they're holding the money in the global liquid category in digital gold and silver. If you look at our global non-liquid portfolio in Portfolio A, our couple had nothing in the global non-liquid category. In Portfolio B, they do. They've got gold and silver in a depository in Europe. That means they've got to fly over there to get it out, which results in this holding being classified as non-liquid. They're investing in land and a cottage next to a cousin's farm in a country that has a high popsicle index and low costs. They've reserved more money to make non-liquid investments in that area, just as they have in the local area in which they live. Until they're ready to do that, they also have that money invested in the global liquid category in digital gold and silver. They have $10,000 in an angel investment. They have an old college roommate who's building a wind farm company, and they've done that small angel investment in the non-liquid category. They have much less now in global liquid, But again, they're now going direct. They're not going through large intermediaries to invest globally. Instead, they are investing in the real economy directly themselves through networks of trust. They've got 200,000 in digital gold and silver. 100 of that is what they have reserved for the local and global non-liquid investment in their home base and backup home base. They have 100,000 invested in sovereign bonds in governments and countries that have a high Popsicle index and strong currencies. This investment protects against real deflation because it should hold its nominal value in its currency. They are keeping it in short-term maturity so that if inflation increases, they don't get whipsawed by being in a long-term fixed income investment. There are governments that can reasonably be expected to continue to pay even in a severe deflation because they're governments and countries that have very sound economics. Again, take a look at the characteristics that we listed on the resource page. Our couple has 75,000 in equities that should do well in inflation. They're intangibles, natural resources, agricultural baskets, bullion trusts, and essential services with strong dividend yields. They're investing in companies in high Popsicle index places or that service those markets. In many cases, they have applied technology that helps shift consumers to a no-waste economy. Some of these companies are making products and services that our couple discovered by using them themselves. So they're looking at their intimate space of what products and services make their life more wonderful and seeing if that can lead them back to companies that turn out to be good investments. They have $375,000 in global liquid investments, of which $100,000 will ultimately get shifted to that non-liquid category as they identify opportunities. In summary, Portfolio B is grounded in the real economy and in fundamental economics. It is also engaged with lots of countries, markets, and currencies that are new to many of us. This diversification means that the value of our couple's assets and investment income will be much more volatile relative to the dollar. They will want to be careful as they do make these changes that they learn to understand and manage liquidity needs and short-term outlook given the increased volatility of the liquid portfolio. In addition, they now have a higher portion of their portfolio in non-liquid investments. Essentially, many opportunities in both total economic and investor returns are non-liquid, including in their local area. Learning how to do non-liquid investment takes time, and it means being much more careful about liquidity needs. They will also have more complex tax returns, and it will be important to identify an accountant who can handle some of the foreign income issues. We hear many, many people, whether they're concerned about peak oil, or they're concerned about peak everything, or they're concerned about global financial meltdown, talking about going local. What we need to remember is that we want to go local in an excellent way. We're not just looking to go local. We're looking to engage the excellent people, both in our neighborhood and our place, and the excellent people worldwide in their local places in a way that builds alignment. Key questions we should be asking ourselves are, how can I use my investment to support and encourage investment around me as well as in other places? How do I build alignment among local businesses and farms, local angel investors, local officials and consumers, and the people who really are concerned about going local? As we respond to the credit crunch and falling in incomes as the consequences ripple through our place, how can we engage with the people and organizations in our place that are excellent? And how can we network place to place in a way that starts to bring alignment in a number of ways? Part of this alignment is aligning the generations. We have retirees who have tremendous experience and knowledge, and some have investment capital. We have a middle generation which has the ability and commitment to build and lead operations. We have a younger generation which sees the importance of building a new kind of sustainable economy and financial system and brings new ideas and intelligence to the task. And we have children who fill us with energy and with hope and have the wildest of ideas. How can we create alignment within our place and within the places we've engaged in between these four generations? How can we build alignment between the wealthy people in a place, the entrepreneurs and the business people who can create or lead enterprises, and the people who need services to help them make this transition or who need employment? I often will come into a community and find the people who have retirement capital, have savings, have wealth, investing it in the bubble economy, and it's not available to engage with the people there who are focused on building self-sufficiency. Sadly, the groups can often be alienated from each other and not see that they could be each other's solution. This alignment requires the people who don't have capital envisioning a way to go about what they're doing that creates an attractive safe haven for the capital of the people that need to pull their money out of the bubble economy and get it to higher ground. We need to create solutions which are attractive to both the living equity within a place and the financial equity within a place, and that we can network and connect place to place. Creating such financially sustainable solutions is perhaps the greatest opportunity of all. It takes time, however, and that means finding the critical mass of people in a place who choose to dedicate the time and expertise to do so. Chapter 7, I Want Current Yield. Because Solari Investment Strategy stresses non-liquid local and community investment as well as precious metals, this may result in a lower current yield in your investment portfolio. This is an issue that needs to be addressed and understood. If you look at Portfolio B versus Portfolio A, we are investing in a manner that produces lower current yield. That's one of the reasons we stress changing our revenue and expense structure so we're generating a much higher savings rate. We have a lower overhead and we have more time and less need for current yield. We've put up an exhibit on the resource page to address what I call the yield trap. Many investments have a current yield, which usually is in the form of interest or a dividend that pays every month or every 3 months or 6 months or every year. Most investments also have a capital gain or loss potential resulting from the difference in the price at the time you buy and the time you sell. The combination of the current yield and the capital gain or loss is the total yield or investor return. So for example, if I buy a corporate bond denominated in US dollars at par, that is the stated value at which it will be redeemed, and it pays an interest rate of 5%, that 5% is my current yield. Let's assume the bond was not called before maturity, and when the bond matures, I get my principal back in dollars, and so I have a 0% capital gain or loss, resulting in a total annual yield of 5% and a yield to maturity of 5%. If I should buy a stock at $10 at the beginning of the year and it pays me a dividend of $1 a year, and then the stock price goes up and I sell it at $12, I get a capital gain of $2. Vastly oversimplifying, remember there are lots of small variations for timing differences and possible exceptions that I'm not going to go into here. My current yield would be approximately 10% and my total yield would be 30%. We are in an economy that is declining, and most Americans are transacting in a currency that is also declining, i.e. the US dollar. That means we need to avoid putting all of our money in financial assets that hold their nominal or stated value and produce a current yield, but do not preserve our purchasing power. On the resource page, we've created a chart to help you understand the yield trap experienced over the last 5 years. We show the performance of three investments. The first investment is a dollar-denominated intermediate corporate bond purchased in 2003. It has a coupon of 5%. We invest $10,000 in it, and every year after taxes, we have an income of $360 that we can use to pay for food or rent or other annual living expenses. In the second example, instead, we put our $10,000 in a bullion precious metals fund, and then every year we sell enough after commissions and taxes to get the same $360 of income. In the third example, we do the same with a digital gold account, and after spread, storage fees, and taxes, we sell enough every year to generate our same $360. I have heard many friends or family say, "Oh, well, I can't sell my investments because I would touch my principal. So it's very important that I stay in this government or corporate or municipal bond because then I won't sell my principal and I will get a yield. And so I can't invest in precious metals because I need to protect my principal and I need income." Well, as we see, if we had bought these three investments in 2003, by 2008, my bond, when it matures, is still worth $10,000. But because the dollar's been declining, the gold is now increased significantly in value in each instance, even when selling it steadily along the way to generate an equivalent income. Even after taxes on the increase in value, the precious metals are worth significantly more than the bond. If you look at the graph above the yield chart on the resource page, it shows that in terms of gallons of gasoline, what our remaining principal will buy at the pump in 2008. Our bond is now worth approximately half of what it was in purchasing power 5 years ago, whereas precious metals, even after taxes on capital gains, has preserved our purchasing power. So while we haven't touched our principal and we've received a 5% current income, we've had a significant amount of our principal in terms of purchasing power wiped out. Now, just because this is what happened over the last 5 years, there is no guarantee this is what's going to happen in the future. Under no circumstances is this a prediction about how bonds or precious metals will perform in the future. We are simply trying to illustrate one point. There is no magic in whether you're living on income or principal of an investment. The key determinant of an investor's position is what the overall yield is over time. So don't just focus on current yield. Rather, pay attention to what investments and assets are holding their value in real terms and what is generating the highest total yield. I remember one very lovely person telling me that they had retired to Paris in 1998, and a year or two ago, their U.S. pension fund payment was worth half of what it had been in euros as a result of the falling dollar. So they were receiving the same pension fund payment every month, but it had lost half of its buying power in Europe. Another way of describing the yield trap chart is the investor who stayed in the bond is experiencing the slow burn. In numeric terms, this is an example of the slow burn phenomena as it drains our personal equity. Focusing our investments on those sectors where we and our advisors anticipate the highest total yields may result in our assets having greater volatility relative to the dollar in which we pay our expenses. Understanding and managing this volatility is critical because we also need to make sure that we keep the funds we need in the short run in liquid assets that maintain their nominal value. These investments may also result in more complex tax preparation, so we need to make sure we arrange the necessary expertise. Chapter 8, Frequently Asked Questions and Issues. Even after the material we've covered so far, there are numerous questions that I'm often asked that I would like to cover in this audio seminar. So let's run through them. There are three questions I often get regarding 401ks or IRAs. First, can I invest in precious metals through my IRA and 401k? Second, my employer's retirement plan has limited options. What should I do? Three, should I add to or close out my 401k or IRA? There are numerous ways of investing in precious metals through many IRAs and self-directed 401ks. If your current account will not allow you to do what you would like to do, you may have the option to move or split the account. Generally, IRAs and 401ks are organized to do liquid investment. It's using them for non-liquid investment that can be more complicated. Where your employer determines your investment options, you will typically have fewer options, which can limit or prevent precious metals investment through these vehicles. In many employer plans, there is often a natural resource option, although typically it channels capital into the largest companies. It should be possible to ask your employer or plan administrator to expand the options to accommodate what you would like to do. The merits of cashing out an IRA or 401k most often come up in a conversation where someone is concerned about capital controls and wants to shift money out of the country. Most people do not realize that there are options through which you can invest your IRA offshore, including in precious metals. There are very occasionally situations where it may make sense for an individual to not invest in 401ks and IRAs at all. For example, I don't use them personally and don't anticipate that I will in the future. Those situations are unique, and typically the tax and other benefits argue for not cashing out these accounts, but instead investing a portion of your funds in this tax-advantaged form. Next, lots of questions on government guarantees. Can I depend on FDIC, SIPC, and other federal and federal-related guarantees? Can I depend on my retirement savings, my government pension fund, or Social Security? Can I depend on my health, life, and other insurance, so private guarantees? In the long run, it's best not to depend on federal guarantees. In the short run, it is useful to depend on them in moderation. Federal guarantees are the driving force behind the absence of financial intimacy and the growth of the bubble economy. We buy mortgage securities that finance the destruction of our communities, and we don't know or care because they're government guaranteed. We put our money in money market funds that buy treasury securities that are financing the policies we say we oppose. We invest in bank CDs of a bank that is taking frightening risk with derivatives, and we don't care because we have FDIC insurance. So government guarantees have lulled us into thinking that our money is safe, doing things that are fundamentally not economic and not sound. The whole point of shifting to the real economy is to ensure our assets are invested in real things that don't depend on force to hold their value. As an economic matter, the U.S. government is now essentially bankrupt. That has not mattered to many of us so long as the U.S. government could continue to borrow money. That capacity to borrow our way out of the problem, however, requires significantly greater force as the economic imbalance and debt increases. If we can sustain our economy only through the threat of force, however, perhaps we don't want to be associated with government guarantees for ethical reasons. If it does not last through force, we don't want to be associated with it for financial reasons, because when the force fails to work, we will lose our money. So the time to wean ourselves of the dependency on the federal credit, federal guarantees, and budget is sooner rather than later to the extent possible. As a practical matter, depending on FDIC insurance in the short run makes sense, as most people need some highly liquid dollar funds on deposit in the banking system. To the extent we can limit or diversify our dependence on federal government pension funds and retirement benefits, such as Social Security, that is also desirable. Our risk is twofold: one, that these arrangements will not be fully funded; two, that the government will inflate the money supply in order to fund them, and so the benefits in real terms will be insufficient to fund our daily needs. The use of health, life, and other insurance is an individualized issue that depends on the person, the specific situation, and the particulars of the insurance policy. We're going through a process where more of us are having terrible experiences depending on some of these policies. If you have not done so, it's worth watching Michael Moore's documentary, Sicko. It describes the number of people who've experienced severe financial problems when their health insurance simply didn't work for them when they needed it. This is a reminder of the importance of spending the time and money you need to maintain your health by natural means. Most insurance arrangements are useful. I can't imagine living without car insurance. For a family breadwinner with children, life insurance is a blessing. However, to the extent that we can move our assets into the real economy and look to those assets and our own self-sufficiency as much as possible, with insurance supplementing and protecting that position, the better off we will be. Another series of questions I often get relate to whether or not we should loan money to friends and family. As we grapple with how to create liquidity in local places or in our own networks directly without working through large intermediaries, one of the most important issues to be addressed is how do we learn to provide liquidity within our personal networks? How do we do it in a way that is professional and has a positive impact on our relationships? I often tell the story of sitting with three other women. One was investing in local bank CDs and was earning about 3%. That bank used a large New York bank as its correspondent. A second woman had stock in that same large New York bank in her 401k and estimated she was earning about 5% at that time. The third woman had financed her business with a credit card from that large New York financial institution and shortly thereafter had her rate raised to 23%. So two of us were financing that large New York financial institution at 4 or 5%, and one of us was borrowing that money back at 23%. This is obviously an opportunity if we can responsibly re-engineer those cash flows to our own benefit. Why do we need a large financial institution thousands of miles away to get in between three close friends? I'm a great believer in loaning money to family and friends, but it's important to understand and address the special risks. First, it is essential to have professional documentation, and if the size of the loan merits doing so, professional servicing. We've seen companies grow up that facilitate both this kind of documentation and servicing for loans to family, friends, and neighbors. Second, our culture is not always responsible in terms of making and keeping financial commitments. Hence, these loans run the risk of defaults that can harm our relationships and lose our money. Consequently, we need to structure them and the fees and rates with these risks in mind. That is one reason why, particularly in a family or close network setting, I much prefer gifting. So my answer is yes, if you have the funds, gift your loan to family and friends with a caveat that it's not something that always results in a perfect experience. Another question I always get is, are money markets safe? Generally, money markets are not as safe as we think. Most American money market instruments or funds are dollar-denominated assets, and generally the disclosure about holdings is relatively non-accessible to a busy person. Money market funds are typically invested in financial assets that are very dependent on the bubble economy. I don't feel comfortable keeping a lot of money personally in money markets. FDIC insured CDs provide a short-term alternative to money market mutual funds. For funds that you do not need in the short term, you can also use money market instruments or funds that are in non-US dollar denominated currencies of stronger sovereign governments and learn to manage the short-term volatility. This may be a sounder approach. Many questions I get about brokers. One of them is, my broker insists I invest in the bubble economy. What do I do? Many active members of the U.S. brokerage community have grown up in the bubble economy. We have many brokers who are only comfortable in and are vested in the bubble economy. In addition, the large brokerage houses and banks have significant inventories as asset managers or as traders and are encouraging their brokerage clients to buy and hold the same. Please do not stay with a broker who will not respect your fiduciary independence and right to dictate what you want to buy and sell. Ultimately, you need to be with a broker who's aligned with you. If you want to go in a certain direction, you want your broker to be eager to help you do it in an excellent way. Recognize that many financial professionals who are affiliated with brokerage or financial institutions are not free to recommend some assets to you. They are required by the terms of their affiliations and regulations to present only what their institutions sell. I have been shocked at the extent to which people literally feel browbeaten, almost as if they're prisoners of their brokers. Their brokers are overconfident, yell at them, are insistent that they not invest in things that they want to invest in, and instead invest in things being pushed by the firm or the broker. I've experienced numerous examples of brokers telling people things that are just not true. Yet the clients feel they absolutely must stay with these people. They're literally being bullied. There are lots of wonderful, competent brokers in this world. If your broker is trying to push you back into the bubble economy and you do not want to go, remove the person from your life and find a broker who is eager to teach you and support you in where you want to go. A second thing that continuously shocks me is we think we can do business with an institution that has a demonstrated record of criminal and unethical activities and think we're going to be safe. Now, why someone would give their personal private financial data to an institution that has a record of financial fraud is something I don't understand. If a financial institution is responsible for ongoing patterns of predatory lending, the issuance of billions in fraudulent securities, for trillions missing from the federal government when they're a member bank of the depository that manages those accounts, the housing bubble, Enron, the suppression of the gold price, etc., etc., it's prudent to avoid them. Take the time to shift your business to companies and people who have maintained their integrity and appreciate your recognition of their efforts to do so. Another question I always get, my basis in my stock is low. I don't want to pay capital gains tax. If paying capital gains tax is the exit fee you have to pay to shift out of the bubble economy, then do it. Don't get trapped in Enron or Bear Stearns stock because you are afraid to pay the exit fee. Don't lose 50% of your value because you're trying to save 15%. Better yet, why not make your charitable contributions with stock that has a low basis? That way you can avoid the capital gain and still get the same benefit of the full deduction. And here's one I hear all the time. I don't want to know what is going on. It is too depressing. Understanding the real deal is a matter of how you approach it. At Solari, we deal with the real deal because we want our living and financial equity to grow. And so we want to understand the real deal because we want to clearly see the opportunities and the risks that is essential to building a better world. So think of life as walking through a beautiful garden full of landmines. We want to make sure we don't step on the landmines and continue to smell the flowers and enjoy the vegetables. I think a lot of people don't want to deal with a real deal because they are presented with ways of learning about it that are negative. To the extent that this shuts down our ability to take action, it's not so wonderful. Or worse, if it encourages us to take unproductive actions. What our wonderful ally Franklin Sanders always says is, quote, "What I like to stress to people who've been contemplating financial Armageddon and meltdown for far too long is that the day after the global financial meltdown, somebody's going to wake up wanting breakfast and somebody's going to make money cooking it for them." So we don't want to know about the real deal in a way that causes us to disinvest, to withdraw, and go live in the woods and eat beans with our shotguns. We want to learn about the real deal in a way that makes us more effective players on the chessboard of life and helps us improve the quality of our lives in the short run and the long run. So learn about the real deal, but do it in a way that gives you energy. As one of Soleri's goals is to help you do this, if you have ideas on how we can help you learn more about the real deal and enjoy doing it, keep them coming. Another, not question, but complaint I often get is preventative healthcare is too expensive for me. If you look at the difference between our Portfolio A and Portfolio B, you notice the folks in Portfolio A have much higher incomes. But if you look at their expenses and then how the bubble economy is draining their assets, they're building less equity and they have less equity than the couple in Portfolio B whose equity is steadily increasing. Typically, couples in this fact pattern are also underspending in terms of both time and money on preventative health care. They often take the position that they cannot afford it. We are in an environment which is increasingly toxic and draining our immune systems, and the quality of our food, water, and air is generally deteriorating. Consequently, we have to be much more proactive in reducing toxicity in our bodies and in our environment and strengthening our immune system. Please spend time and money to ensure you have excellent water and fresh food and preventative health care. It's a great investment because so many of the people who suffer financially do so as a result of not having the physical energy and health that they need to generate income and build equity and deal with these uncertainties and complexity. I know so many stories of people who are run down, have memory problems, are depressed, afraid of Alzheimer's, or going mad. They find out with proper testing that they have high lead and other heavy metals toxicity levels or stressor chemicals and other imbalances. After taking the time to address their individual problems naturally, many of them are fine. So please do not invest in a bubble economy when you can invest in your own health and the clear mind and strong spirit and body you desire and deserve. Another comment I often get is someone telling me that their financial information is private. I don't believe that financial privacy exists. My motto is avoid disclosing to anyone what you're not willing to have on the evening news. Better yet, avoid doing anything that you are not willing to have on the evening news. I assume that all of my financial data is accessible to a wide variety of players. I remember somebody once saying, "Why do you put so much information on the internet? Don't you want to keep it private?" And I said, "Well, since the insiders have access to it, I want to make sure that everyone else has access to it to level the playing field." We should assume our banking information, our brokerage information, and our other financial data is far more accessible to a wide variety of people than we would like to think or is legal. This is one of the many reasons I stress never break the law. If you have money offshore, don't think you can get away with not paying your taxes. Again, if you don't want it on the evening news, then don't do it, don't buy it, and don't invest in it. We're moving into a world where there is no such thing as privacy. This goes for healthcare data as well. Assume that what you tell your doctor in confidence will appear in his or her notes and will be acquired at some point by a disability, health, or life insurance underwriter, and through this mechanism entered into an institutionally shared healthcare database to be used to your detriment. Documentation and disaster recovery. Soleri established a disaster recovery plan last year. It's a marvelous exercise. I live in an area with ongoing tornado risks that is a day's drive from New Orleans. In 2004, my neighbors and I experienced what happens when people we know go through such an experience. So I'm a great believer in disaster preparedness. You never know what the future may bring. One of the most important parts of disaster recovery is making sure that you and your assets are well documented, including redundant documentation in multiple places. We do not cover estate planning in this audio seminar, but it's important to mention that good estate planning is invaluable, so add that to your planning and documentation list. Another question I get is, should I continue to make charitable donations? Should I tithe? I look at donation and gifts as investments that increase total economic return. We don't expect a return to investor, although what many people who give regularly will tell you is that what goes around comes around. Generosity always pays in the end. You just never know where the benefits will come from. It's more diffuse than investments that have a financial return to the investor. In the Solari model, our focus is on making money in a way that adds value to the greater whole. The current economic model teaches people it's fine to make a mess and do harm to make money, and then so long as you give a piece of your winnings to charity, you're a good person. In our opinion, this is multiple personality disorder. The world will be far better off if we don't make money doing things that cause the popsicle index to go down. Too often these days, we see people who hold themselves out to be philanthropists as a cover for unethical or criminal activities and expect us to admire them for giving away a tiny portion of the money that they have stolen from us and the environment. My notion of charity is they should restore what they have stolen to those whom they stole it from and whose time and goodwill they drained. So the first most important rule of charity is conduct your life and your business so you don't create a family, a community, and a world that is starving and in need of charity. Again, do no harm. In all things, do your best to always contribute to a higher total economic return. Our second rule of charity is to practice financial intimacy. Working through people and groups you know and trust, use charity to serve decentralization, transparency, and things that reduce risk for real people and living things. That means shifting away from large charities, large foundations, large universities, and other organizations that are part of highly centralized systems that use their rich endowments to finance the bubble economy on a tax-sheltered basis. Donations to such groups decrease total economic returns. Put your money to work in more intimate ways, helping family and friends who are finding these times challenging, or folks who are making a real difference in the community and networks that touch your daily life, and leaders who are decentralizing economic and political power. If you want some suggestions, check out some of the great organizations we link to on the Solari blog. I like the tithing model because whatever resources come to us reflect the blessings of others' gifts. The gifts of the harvest from the earth and topsoil, the gifts from the rain and the sun, the gifts from the animals in our lives, the gifts of the hard work and intelligence and inventions of many generations before us, the gifts of so many people around the world keeping their word and working hard to make things go. All of our resources depend on the countless generosity of life and people, the kindness of strangers. Tithing is a way of saying, I'm going to dedicate a percent of my blessings to circulate to others who will use it well without expectation of return. Tithing is often used as a term that describes contribution to religious organizations. I'm not using it here in that context because I believe that real solutions require that the human race evolve emotionally, culturally, and spiritually. I feel personally that financially supporting great civic and spiritual leadership is critical to healing and evolving our financial system and our communities. Hence, tithing in a spiritual context is also a practice that makes sense to me. Although a topic for another audio seminar, our money flows are very responsive to our intention and our spirit. At the core of financial intimacy is the understanding that aligning and integrating spirit and money has the potential to unleash tremendous energy and power in our lives. Some questions have to be addressed one by one. Many of the most important questions are not things we can generalize about. They can only be addressed with full knowledge of the unique situation, the person, the place, the family, and a complex variety of legal, regulatory, and local information that creates critical context. Without that relevant body of law and regulations and the unique facts of the situation, it's very hard to make generic comments that are useful for listeners. There's a whole world of these one-on-one questions that are terribly important, particularly as the housing bubble and the debt bubble winds down. And so we don't want to underestimate their importance to listeners. It's just that they really need to be addressed in a one-on-one context and with the benefit of the specific expertise involved. Chapter 9, Staying Current. Let's talk about the best ways to stay current as events continue to unfold. First, cut out anything that's not useful and is wasting your precious time. Stop listening to or reading sources of information which do not have your best intentions at heart and are not helping you get out of the bubble economy and into the real economy. The most important step is to reduce or cut out TV time. One recent survey indicates that the average American watches 8.5 hours of TV a day. If you're watching disinformation and misinformation for 8.5 hours or programming that denigrates the human spirit, it's very hard to have any time left over for real information. Next, cut out the distractions. If you look at how much time people spend watching and discussing presidential political campaigns that can't make a significant difference to our individual lives, it's an interesting exercise to count up that time and imagine what else it could be used for. State and local campaigns are much more important in terms of our day-to-day life and involve more of the real economic and political power than the national campaign than most people realize. National politics depends on local machines and cash flows. Let's look at some numbers. Let's say you live in a county that has 100,000 people, and the average TV watching time, really sitting and watching time, is 3 hours a day. In addition, the time spent discussing or tracking the presidential political campaign is an average of 30 minutes a week. That is approximately 113 million hours spent in a year in this county in watching TV and discussing the presidential election. Imagine if the community decided to take one-third of that time to invest in building a more sustainable community. That means they would have approximately 37 million hours, or the equivalent of 18,500 full-time staff years, addressing their needs to reduce expenses and risk. Okay, so what are the best sources to stay current on news and events? First of all, watch what is going on around you in your place and the places in which your family and network live. Trust the people you know who you respect rather than corporate sources of news. Talk to people about what they see and hear, what is happening in the economy around them. One of the reasons I love truckers is they drive around. They see what's going on. They talk to each other. As a result, they know a great deal of what is really happening. Next, use the Solari blog for the deeper news. We have top picks and commentary focused on helping people achieve successful total economic and investor returns. We provide a rich set of links to the best sources of financial news and other news that we find useful. If we're using a source regularly and we think it's a useful source, that doesn't mean that we agree with everything the source is posting. We link to some sources that facilitate a very wide range of opinions. That's because we try to avoid material omissions. Our sources are less likely to omit intentionally. Omissions are the most egregious errors that you can see in the media. We prefer media that respects the reader's right to judge and filter. That means there is a wide selection, including things that don't represent our point of view. Next, listen to our audio seminars. This is our 18th audio seminar. Each one was created in response to an overwhelming flow of questions and requests that our listeners and audiences have posed. In every audio seminar, there is a resource page. We put links to the best books, the best audios and videos, the best articles on all these important topics. These are the results of years of research searching out the best materials on each topic. In the process of understanding our economy and what we could do to shift it, I have read thousands of books and watched hundreds of documentaries in addition to dealing with decades and billions of transactions and once upon a time building rich databases to track and simulate the U.S. economy by community. In either CD or MP3 form, you can listen to these audio seminars in the car, or as you are taking public transportation, flying in a plane, or working out at the gym. One of my favorite messages came in from a college student who said that whenever her history or economics professors started to describe things that were not true, she would just start listening to the Soleri audio seminars and smile because now, in fact, she had access to the real deal. Also on the blog is my list of our favorite recent documentaries. And as you know, I think movies and documentaries are some of the fastest ways of understanding what is going on in the real world. I very much want to do an audio seminar called Let's Go to the Movies, where we describe what the real deal is and how it works by taking you to the relevant movies and showing you a way of looking at the real deal that is so very entertaining. Chapter 10, Summary. This audio seminar, Positioning Our Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times, represents years of working through the issues with so many people in our network around the world as they work to integrate a deeper understanding of the world around them with how they manage their assets in the best interests of themselves and their family and do so in a way that has a positive impact on our world. First, I want to thank the hundreds of people who have contributed to our understanding of these issues. Second, I want to encourage you to listen to this audio seminar more than once. Take the time to print out the articles and the before and after portfolios and portfolio details and charts. Study them and take the time to relate what you learn to the areas in your life that are interesting and gratifying for you. If you have friends and family that are interested, I encourage you to take the MP3 file or the CD and listen with them together and discuss the material. Soleri circles sometimes start from a simple potluck dinner to share an audio seminar like this one or a video such as our DVD, Navigate the Falling Dollar. What you can do with a group of family and friends is to split up the different recommended and background readings. Everybody read or listen to one or two, and then come together and take time to teach each other. Then identify the ways that you can help each other begin in the short run to take actions that help you understand and see opportunities to grow your wealth in the real economy in the ways that are powerful for you. I want to stress again, every person is unique. Every place is unique. Every portfolio is unique. So this is not investment advice. What we're describing are overarching principles, opportunities, and risks. I want to encourage you again to seek out whatever professional help you believe you need. An investment advisor, financial planner, estate planner, tax advisor, or other professionals in order that they craft an individualized plan that takes into account all the relevant circumstances, objectives, and risks that each of you is individually dealing with. In closing, I would like to stress again that it is possible for anyone, no matter what your background is, no matter what your interests are, to learn how to manage your own finances and your own investment in a real economy. You may not want to be an expert in all the aspects, so you may use lots of other people and you may delegate all or certain aspects. But whether you do it yourself or delegate it to others, the intellectual mastery you need to govern the process can be yours. It's a matter of integrating your money and your transactions with the real life and real world around you. Remember, the Solari philosophy, don't worry about whether there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you need to start one. I also want to stress that if you have no assets or investments now, that learning about these issues can help you build assets. Learning can also help you be part of creating opportunities in businesses that are attractive opportunities for those who do have capital and help you create and build capital both for you and your investors. We want to go from a world where we're just reacting and chasing yield in a bubble economy to a world where we're a player and money is a tool that we are using to build our future. In the process, we're collaborating with the people around us that we love, all four generations, including the children in our lives. And we're investing to build a real economy that's the kind of real economy that we would like to live in, and we would like our children and grandchildren and future generations to enjoy. A new world is percolating. Let's figure out how to make it financially sustainable so that it can attract all the resources currently invested in things that are creating a world that is not what we want to something more peaceful and more wealth creating. Let's start today and just keep learning. It's a lifelong journey. It's never over. If you come to our website at www.solari.com, you will find the Solari Real Channel, an online invention room filled with networks and allies who are inventing this new world together. You are most welcome there. We are just at the beginning of this lifelong journey. There is nothing we would love more than to stay in cahoots with you and yours. You and your efforts are so very appreciated. Let us know how we may better serve you. And remember always that you are in our thoughts and prayers. So with prayer in mind, as is customary with the close of our audio seminars, I would like to invite you to join the Solari Prayer Team leader, Eliana, for an invocation. Eliana is a prayer minister, book editor, and writing coach in the San Francisco area. She's also a lovely human being. Eliana?
Thank you so much, Catherine. This is the time when we can settle in after receiving all of this powerful information and return to the place of quiet inside of ourselves. In that silence, what we've heard can impact our spirit in a way that helps us begin to truly bring about the changes in our world that we hope for. So I invite you to take a moment to settle yourself, to take a slow breath in, release it gently, and feel your gratitude for being alive and for having access to this kind of insight into your world and your own personal situation. Know that it is already creating for you a new map from which you can begin to reorder and rebuild your world with others who are of like mind and intention. And so, keeping in mind Catherine's very powerful statement that money is the tool that we use to create our world and to build our future, let's consider again the two questions that she raised at the beginning of this seminar. Why are we here, and what do we want to create? In the coming days, as you look further into what you have heard in this seminar and begin to spend some time with the resources that are available to you now, you might continue to ask yourself these questions. And as you do that, you can remember, where my money goes and what it does in my name, there am I. Knowing that in that taking of responsibility is our point of power. And as we allow what we've heard to take root and to grow in its own way inside of our lives, in its own timing, we come to the place where we realize I can build a wonderful world. I can succeed, and based on the real deal. I can come together with like-minded folks and make new choices in a way that is responsible, that is energizing for me, that will protect me and my family, and will make all of us successful in this current financial environment. You might want to reserve some time in the coming days and invest it in starting to do the learning that will help make these ideas that you have heard in this seminar into reality for you, your family, your community, your world. You can discover ways to team up with others who will enjoy learning and making their own changes along with you. As Catherine suggested, you can start with whatever is most on your heart. And even if you just do one small thing, such as switching your money to a local bank, you'll find that it brings you so much energy and enthusiasm that doors you couldn't have imagined were there will swing open to new opportunities. And as you start to put into effect what you have learned here, be encouraged in knowing that you are joined with many others who will be going through the same challenges and coming up with the same successes. So let's all give thanks together for the many sincere efforts that are being made by people of goodwill everywhere to come clean and to rebuild our world. We on the Solari team thank you for being one of those people, for taking new risks, and for bringing others like yourself into circles to begin to make these changes together. And we will have the world that we want to create, a world that is a wonderful world for all. So as we close, receive the blessing now that comes from your intentions and that empowers you to do new and great things. And pass that blessing along to others as you go. Thank you so much on behalf of the whole Solari team for joining us.